Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Business Writers Radio, brought to you by Business Writers Exchange.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Business Writers Radio. Stone Peyton Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast speaker, author, leadership coach, Mr. Willie Steiner. How you doing this afternoon, man?
I am doing great.
You have a book out called Discover the Joy of Leadership, a practical guide to resolving your management challenges. How long has this book been out?
It's just been over 2 months.
2 months, so it's fresh. It's brand new.
Yes, it is.
Can you talk about the why you decided to write a book? That's a pretty big undertaking.
Yeah, it was ultimately a two-year effort, but I hate to admit how many years this reflects, but I've pretty much of a pack rat about concepts and ideas that relate to leadership. Mm-hmm. Early in my career, I was involved in leadership development with RCA and in the General Electric Corporation. I learned the basics there and was involved at the more senior levels. And I just fell in love with the whole idea. So I've collected material and I've been coaching now for over 20 years. But I realized I have a lot of stuff that I haven't necessarily needed to share with people, but people could use to know it. So as a way to basically promote my website and my business, I decided to engage in doing more regular posts on my website, blog posts.
Right.
And then after I went through those, and that actually became a lot of fun. I would find things going on in the city, and I'd relate those to these leadership concepts of all sorts. And then after I got those done, I hired an editor, and she helped me de-blogize them, which is her term.
That's a very technical industry term there, right?
I guess. I'd never heard it either, but that became each chapter. Each chapter is meant to be just 3 to 5 pages long. And the book is supposed to sit on your desk, and it's a reference manual for you relative to management and leadership issues. You should be able to look through a chapter in a few minutes and at least get a rough idea of about at least one possible way to deal with what you got dealing with.
And you're not kidding, where it does kind of run the gamut from 3 survival lessons from a Vietnam prisoner of war to the no asshole rule, you know, all the way to, how to network. So like you're going all over the place there.
Well, but it's categorized in certain areas, and we can talk about that a little bit more. But yeah, and quite frankly, that reflects the reality of what the world is all about.
Mm-hmm.
My focus is on people. I mean, I look at I think of companies like a chair, like a three-legged stool. You know, the seat is the company itself, and it's got 3 legs. One of them is profits. That's the money. That's how we account for everything. Then there's process. That's how we do what we do to make what we make. And then there's the people side of it. And so I only concentrate on the people side of it. But as you well know, Lee, there's a lot of different kind of people out there, a lot of different kind of situations come up. So although this seems like it's all over the place, I think that's actually quite reflective of what the real world's all about.
And
each of the chapters reflects a actual real life situation where I've dealt with something in my personal or my professional life.
Now, you mentioned that within the chapters are kind of chunked out into sections. One section is leadership, one section is time, one is communication, one is change, one is relationships. Why did you choose those as kind of headings?
Those in most, for the most regard, mirrors my approach as a coach. When you think about the way the world works, leadership is a higher order kind of a task. That's strategy, that's vision. But underneath that, there are the whole issue of the management tasks. One of the reasons that I felt also compelled to write the book is that early in my career, when I was involved in leadership and management development, it was if you were put in a responsible position where you had to get work done through other people, you were put through training to enhance your ability to take the best possible use of those human resources that you were responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the 80s, in the rise of the corporate raiders, and I'm reading another book, a book recently called The 1% about that, they came in and took over companies, and in their zeal to squeeze as much shareholder value out as they could, the idea of the investment that used to be thought of in management and leadership development became a cost. And what do you do with costs? You try to minimize them. You try to get rid of them if you can.
Right.
And so there's literally been a couple generations of people where that was not the norm. When times were flush, they'd throw some money at it, but it wasn't a continuous thing. It's always been that way at, let's say, the General Electric Corporation where I used to work, but very many other companies. And quite frankly, that's the bad news. The good news is that's kept me in business very nicely for the last 20 years.
It's good job security for you.
It has been just that, yes.
Now, I guess kind of the mindset shifted from management coaching to leadership coaching, so that no longer do they want to train you to manage, they want to train you to lead?
Well, basically, I think there's a certain concept of that, but the bottom line for me is, since I said so many people didn't even get exposed to some of the basic in management coaching, that's where the four areas come in. How do you spend your time? How do you build relationships all around you, inside and outside of your work or business? How do you go about dealing with change? This is a rapidly changing world. And then how do you communicate? And there's a zillion facets of communication. I have very specific methodologies and models that I share with people. And it's not that you sit back and you just go through a course this week. No, it's all very carefully fine-tuned to whatever the needs of the client are. But if you don't figure out how to manage those things better, when it comes time to actually lead, when you rise up to that level, the management stuff is the tactical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The leadership stuff is the higher order, the vision, the strategy. And the problem is, if you continue to do what you were doing before and or struggling with some of the management things, when they put you in a leadership situation, there's a good likelihood you'll fail.
Right. You're almost set up to fail. Right. If they're not.
Yeah, I mean,
now, can you talk about in the executive leadership level when you're coaching executive leadership? Is that something that is only for executives, or is this kind of the skills, can they be transferred to any level?
It really can be transferred to any level. And I've done that. I've even done it with high level individual contributors in technical organizations. But it isn't so much about leadership there. It's about influence. How do they influence across the organization? So when that happens, we focus more on how do they manage their time, but more importantly, how do they build, maintain, and enhance relationships, and how do they communicate? So it varies, but I have to kind of drill it down to what's the application of this to the right level. So at the senior most levels, you're really talking about management of relationships across industries or across a whole large organization, oftentimes very much international. At the lower levels, it's within a more narrow scope and a more narrow band of responsibility. And so you dial it down and then you kind of tune it in to what the specific needs are at those different levels. When I was 30 years old, I was in charge of training and development for the consumer electronics business of RCA. We had 18,000 employees, and I had my own leadership development, management development center that I ran. And so I've dealt from the shop floor all the way to, the executive leadership. So I do know how to tune it in, so to speak, to the various levels. So there's stuff that can be learned. Some stuff is generalizable across the board, and then there's some stuff you just dial it in where you need it.
Now, I would imagine that leadership as, kind of a foundational elements that make sense in every industry, but do you specialize in any one specific industry?
No, actually, I kind of refer to myself as an industry agnostic. I've worked in financial services, manufacturing, cable TV, and other technical organizations, universities, associations, small business. I'm currently doing some pro bono work for a healthcare startup organization. They actually help. They've gotten over 120 companies up and running in the healthcare field in the last 2 years. And it's an incubator. And I do other work with startups too. So I just have always loved how businesses operate. You know, how do they make their money? What's different about their clients? How do they serve their clients? And I'm always fascinated about the different nuances of how different businesses serve their clients and what their needs are. So I've chosen not to focus. Sometimes maybe that has cost me some business where somebody was looking for that. But I really find that when you get down to it, people are people. And the same fundamental concepts that are there on again, the time, the communication, the relationships, and the change, they're pretty consistent for all folks and all organizations. But my special skill is how to dial that in and able to make that really focus on what that individual client needs.
Now, when you were writing the book and you were taking kind of this whole variety of material and then you were kind of chunking it out into the different areas, was there anything there that surprised you when you looked at it kind of holistically?
Well, actually, it surprised me a little bit about how all over the place it was, just like you said before. But at the same time, nothing ever really basically challenged my conviction that there was some meaningful information there that, you know, some pieces are going to resonate more than others, depending on their needs at that particular time. I guess really what I thought of is it reinforced that I had a pretty good idea going on. And the thing that I've been most pleased with so far, Lee, is that people have said to me, you know, Willie, when I read one of these chapters, it's just like I'm sitting down and I'm talking to you. It's comfortable. And that's another thing that I really hoped and intended it would be like. So I kind of feel like it came together. I don't know. It certainly wasn't happenstance, but there also wasn't that grand a design, to be frank with you.
Now, when you were writing the book, was there ever anything in the back of your head that, look, I'm giving away all my secrets here. If people read this, they won't need my services?
You know, a lot of people have asked me that. And the reality is what I bring, with this is kind of a reference manual. What I bring is how to apply this stuff as a coach. I believe that everybody has a kind of a unique ability in this world. And I define a unique ability as basically something that you're really, really good at, but it's almost an unconscious competence. You're not quite sure why you're good at that, but it just seems to happen that way. It could be somebody that happens to be, you know, a financial genius or a wordsmith. I mean, a great writer or whatever. There's a lot of learning that goes in there, but there's inspiration too. So I actually have a unique ability that helps me see through the noise in anybody else's system. I help them connect the dots in a way that they have maybe not considered before. And then I use that skill that I have to help them make better decisions. So the bottom line is, yeah, you could probably get a lot of ideas all by yourself, but in more, in larger, fast moving, complex businesses, there's plenty of room for a leadership coach in those today.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you can go on YouTube and see how to fix your car, and it might be better just to hire an expert.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. By the time, because I tell you, every time I get into something mechanical, talk about something, because there's always more parts at the end than when I started.
Exactly.
<it's pretty> scary.
Now, when you're doing the book, are you using it as part of the marketing? Are you able to leverage it as a way to build your business?
Well, that was always the idea. I never really figured I'd sell 10,000 books or whatever. But it's already, in the 2 months I've had it out, I've already generated a fairly significant amount of business, as well as I've got 3 speaking gigs on the horizon from that. And it's doing exactly what I hoped it to do in that regard. And, you know, all I need is a few key clients and I'll have my investment paid for. So although I'll never pay myself back entirely for all the time and energy I put in.
That's right.
That's impossible, but it was a labor of love, but I enjoyed it. I wish I had known more about how the editing process is supposed to work and all that, because, that became a lot more laborious than I thought it would be, even using outside editors.
Yeah, it's because you self-published the book, right? Did you even produce?
That's correct.
Did you pursue it all traditional publishing?
You know, I did not, because quite frankly, I didn't have the time. I mean, I've talked to people that have done that. One of my friends is a teaches writing, and she's had two books published. And she talked to me a little bit about how difficult it was to get a publisher, especially her first time out, to really even entertain, you know, publishing her work. And then she's just really a top drawer expert. And so I figured, you know, since the self-publishing process is manageable, I go that route. And then if, you know, people really like what they saw, maybe the next one I have in me will attract a publisher.
Now, how do you go about promoting the book? Obviously, you're on this show promoting it, but is there anything else you're doing to actively get the word out?
I've worked with a firm to help get the word out through putting additional guest posts on various different sites. I have done some speaking along those lines. After being in the business for 20 years, I have quite a good network of people that I know. I've been mailing out books left, right, and center to get people, and that's helped to get the word out as well. Those are kind of the ways I've been doing it thus far, and so we're getting, I feel like I'm getting some decent traction.
Now, any advice for that person, that new author, the first time they're attacking this? It sounds like something that was helpful for you was the fact that you did have a blog to kind of lean on to have a lot of the content you had already kind of put the time in over the years with your blog. But any advice for that first time author?
Yeah, that helped me a lot to have the outlet, the blog, to use it. And so, because that kept me disciplined about going ahead and trying to write on a regular basis. It kept me disciplined about being sure that the content was well developed, the writing was good, and that it was as clean and crisp as it could be. There were no errors. I had to check a couple times. So I was producing a really good output. And then I committed to a timetable of doing this. And it seems like every time you've got something really big to handle, the time presents itself if you take advantage of it. And I did have that. And so it does take a lot of discipline to stay at it, because there were a couple times where I thought to myself, I'm just had it with this business. I just can't keep going. But then I realized how far along I was, and I could not turn back. And I have to say, I have a tremendous amount of pride in what I've done, and that helps. So the outcome is worth it. And the only other thing is I probably didn't plan as well for the promotion side of it. But in terms of the stuff that I'm doing now, I think the other thing is that I kind of thought as soon as the book got published, there'd be this huge, you know, avalanche of interest in me and the book or whatever. And I came to realize it doesn't really work that way. You know, that it takes time to get it out there, to get it, you know, people to see it. And so that's a level of patience that my brother told me. He says, you're not a patient sort. That's not the way we are. And so he encouraged me to be a lot more patient about it.
That sounds like good advice. Now, in the book, you distinguish between leadership and management in the title. Can we kind of discuss that a little bit about why that was so, you did that so mindfully?
Yeah, I mean, the idea is, again, I kind of referred to it before, if you don't get the management stuff right and become skilled at that, then if you have that chance to move up to be in leadership, that other stuff will kind of drag you back down. It's kind of like quicksand. On the back of my business card, I have a quotation by Peter Drucker, the great management guru. Mm-hmm. And it says, management is about doing things right. Leadership is about doing the right things. And I think that's one of the best possible, most succinct ways of putting it. So you've got to be able to manage, as I said, those building blocks or whatever. But when you get to the higher order things, like, again, strategy, charting a new direction, keeping people aligned to a common purpose. Those are the higher order things that are the strategic, not the tactical types of things that have to happen. And so that was the idea. You'll be a better leader if, in fact, you can be sure that you can, you know, resolve those management challenges along the way. I had an interesting situation. I got a call. I sent a book to one of my former clients. And when I had lunch with him, really just last Monday, he sat down and he says, well, you're the first one that's gotten one of these. And he handed me his new business card, which was president and CEO. And it's an international $8 billion auto parts distributor. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to me about that firm and what they were going to do. And we re-engaged as he re-engaged me as his coach. And I said, so Nick, well, what are you planning on doing? What do you think is the big challenge? And he said, well, he says, I'm going to focus on strategy. And as he had described how well, what a well-oiled machine his firm was, and he'd been there about 4 years as a CFO, I said, well, how much more of a strategy do you have to kind of figure out in terms of serving the market that you're in? He goes, well, that's the where the strategy comes in. He says, have you ever heard of electric cars? He said, we work with, you know, the internal combustion engine vehicles. We don't know electric cars. That market has not evolved. But that's where the future is going to be, and we have to have a strategy to figure that out. So how they make get the stuff distributed, that's the management stuff. The strategy, the leadership of where they want to go, that was a great example. And again, I heard about that one just 8 days ago.
Now, do you believe that leadership can be taught, or is this something you're born with?
I definitely believe it can be taught. I think there are some people that have personalities where they're more gregarious. They listen better. They connect better. They, quite frankly, they have better empathy. One of the highest levels of effectiveness in leaders is that they're empathic listeners and empathic people. They're listening to see where that other person's coming from. A great salesman is a good listener because they try to figure out what's going on with them. What do they need? I like to say to folks, if somebody says something and you think that's the dumbest damn thing you've ever heard, that's the wrong question. Thing is, why are they, not what are they saying? Why are they saying that? Now, that's especially true in a relationship or a business dealing that you're having somebody where you each need each other as a mutual dependence. In that regard, some people are geared better to being able to figure out how to make those connections. And so that's a really an important kind of a thing. But other than that, there's a lot of it that can be taught. It's not all, it's more science than art, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through what it's like, maybe your first session with someone? That way the listener gets an idea, if they were to engage with you as a coach, kind of what they can expect.
Yes. Yeah, so to get started, you know, I meet with the individual, I get to understand their organization and their situation. And the bottom line is that working with an executive coach is all about continuous improvement. Okay. And continuous improvement can only occur if you have three things. The first is awareness. The second is accountability. And the third is actions. And that's true if it's a manufacturing firm or if it's therapy. It's all the same. So the first thing we do is I do 360-degree interviews with a large number of people that work with that individual. And then I have them go through some assessments on their personality, their listening styles, and their level of emotional intelligence. That all comes together in terms of almost a data dump of a lot of information. We sort through all that. And then what are the one or two goals that we can work from? So that whole thing can take, you know, 6 weeks to almost 8 weeks to get all that done.
Mm-hmm.
But the first is, you know, testing for chemistry. Do we have a fit? Me getting to understand the organization. And of course, I pick up a tremendous amount of information and insights when I do the interviews on the behalf of my client. So that's how we get started.
And then what's a reasonable expectation of, you know, a change or some sort of level of success? How do they know, you know, when are they high-fiving you?
Actually, the feedback loop is built into my process. There's a gentleman named Marshall Goldsmith who is considered the preeminent executive coach, I think, in the world. And I've been trained in his methodology. And so when we set a goal, you then select, you know, 3 to 5 key, what he calls stakeholders, people that you interact with on a regular basis and that are willing to give you ongoing feedback. And so instead of saying, okay, we're going to set this goal and in a year, we're going to see how we did. This says, let's try it a different way. Let's go ahead and let's set a goal. And then each month we'll have a real quick check-in with everybody, these 3 to 5 stakeholders, and they can give us to see how we're doing. And those conversations each month take no more than 5 minutes apiece. So if you have 5 people that are your stakeholders, you have, you know, 5 of those, you're taking 25 minutes a month to know that you're on target, you're shaping your behavior the way you want. And then at the end, we do another measurement and I do a round of interviews again. And so it's really pretty clear if you've really been able to make a change. I had a client who he's kind of a slight fellow, but he was put in a really difficult operational job and it was under-resourced too. And so he was flying constantly and under a tremendous amount of pressure. And he ended up becoming a very surly, difficult guy to be around, which was completely unlike this guy. He looks really mild-mannered. But when he and I started to work together, that's what he decided to work on. That this scowl, this terribly bad body language that he would get into when he got upset in a meeting, it was turning people off. People wouldn't work with him. So that's what he decided he wanted to work on. And after about four months, people said, stop asking me about it, Mike, because you stopped it. It's not an issue anymore. Let it go. And so, and then that what that did is that not only helped him change his performance, in this case was changing his body language, but it helped to shift the perception about him being such a crabby guy. And so it's all built in that way. And so, you know, the high fives come because whatever the goal or goals that they set, and we only set a couple goals. If we get one done, we'll add another one in during the period of time we're working together. And I have worked with some clients for years because they're just, this is helpful to them. But yeah, it's all the goal setting and the feedback and the success is all built into the model.
Now, do you see kind of common mistakes that leaders make? You know, you've worked in the industry for a while at all different levels. So it sounds like, you know, you would kind of see some things over and over again.
I think one of the first things that happens is people feel like when they get into a new role, they have to know it all. You know, like you've been in one area of finance and now you're over some other areas that you don't have deep expertise in. Well, you need to drill down and you need to know it in great detail. So if anybody ever asks them a question, and there are organizations where when you're in there, you're expected to know all the way down to almost a very low level, the detail of what's going on. And that's organizationally unfair and very counterproductive. You know, it's okay. You should be able to say in a meeting, well, I don't know, but let me follow up on that. You know, now, if it's because you should know, it's part of your job, that's fine. But if it's a detail that's maybe a couple levels down, that's unfair. Well, there's some people that automatically feel they need to know everything and they become a bottleneck in the organization. Things just kind of come to a crunch of a halt because they're so focused on trying to know everything that everybody else is doing that it just grinds everything up. So that's one of the key areas. The other area is people don't listen very well. This is obviously an issue with our political system right now, but you're listening more to get your point across rather than listening to what that other person has to say. And you also, and so what happens is people don't really believe that none of us is as smart as all of us. And the most effective leaders are the ones that know how to say and to show that we is really better than me. So I would say those are the two most significant ones that I see as problems.
Willie Stone here. Before we wrap, what are you reading these days other than your own work and that of your closest colleagues? Do you have a blog or a book or a podcast or something that you would recommend our listeners check out for inspiration and information?
I follow the work of Marshall Goldsmith and his blogs because I've been trained by him. His newer book, Triggers, is one that I've read and have enjoyed. I follow several leadership thought leaders is one of the ones that I like. I figure that's one I'm always getting good insights from. I follow Bruce Tulgan, T-U-L-G-A-N. He's got Rainmaker Thinking. Mm. And he writes a lot about the idea of the different generations within the workforce. And I find that really fascinating. I've got three kids, late 20s, early 30s, and I always, you know, work really hard not to be totally an old fuddy-duddy. I was going to say old fart, but I didn't think that was appropriate. But in the work I do with this healthcare incubator, I mean, I've got a lot of years on a lot of these people and some of the training that I've done, I really was thinking they wouldn't find this relevant, but they did. And so that was a real resource for me. But I find his stuff very, very interesting too. So those are a few of the ones I do follow.
Well, I'm glad I asked. All right. Where can our listeners get their hands on this book and where should they reach out if they'd like to have a conversation with you or someone on your team about the work that you guys do? I don't know, whatever's appropriate, LinkedIn, email, whatever's appropriate.
Well, obviously I have a LinkedIn profile under William Steiner with Executive Coaching Concepts. So that's there. The book is available on Amazon. It's in paperback, and there is a Kindle version. And simply go to Discover the Joy of Leadership. Once you get leadership in there, it'll pop up, getting good traction for it. If you want to contact me, my phone number and my email are all on my website. And that company is executivecoachingconcepts.com. I don't have any problem giving out my phone number, but it's on the website as well as videos of me and other things that I've done and a whole array of all my client companies and ways you can get free material from the website and the schedule consultations. There's everything is available and automated through the website. But again, my email address is Coach Willie, all one word, Coach Willie, W-I-L-L-Y, at ECCleader.com. And everybody's feel free to reach out and email me, and we will respond promptly.
Well, Willie, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show this afternoon. We got to pick up this conversation and do this sometime again. I can't thank you enough for joining us and sharing the wisdom that you have. We'll do it again sometime, man.
I would love to do that. Thank you very much.
All right, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon, author of Discover the Joy of Leadership and the Chief Mohal at Executive Coaching Concepts, Mr. Willie Steiner, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you next time on Business Writers Radio.
Business Writers Radio is brought to you by Business Writers Exchange. To learn more about developing a successful book and building your business around it, visit business-writers-exchange.com.